The following is a Barrett Sports Media production. We do the digging, so you don't have to.
We've got breaking news.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Bringing you the biggest stories from the industry you care about. This is the Media Noise Podcast.
Well, let's hear it.
Now, here's your host, Dimitri Ravanos.
Thanks so much for joining me on another edition of Media Noise. Coming up today, Ryan Glassbiegel is going to pop by. We'll talk about the potential for one of the network's big-time inside reporters to someday be employed directly by a sports book. Also, Michael Quirk, one of our news writers, will make his debut on the show as we talk about the Arizona Bowl and its new partnership with Barstool Sports. But first, there is some movement in California sports radio this week as both LZ Granderson and Doug Christie stepped away from their stations, respectively. LZ, of course, at 710 ESPN Los Angeles, and Doug Christie at KHTK in Sacramento. Christie's feels a little bit less surprising, only because he is going to stay with the Kings organization. He's just moving from a broadcaster role to an assistant coach's position. Like, I think sometimes we forget how much of a journeyman that guy was because he is so associated with those Kings teams now. But the fact that he is going to be an assistant with the Kings makes this very easy to understand and not at all hard to have seen coming if you look at it in hindsight, I guess, which is always 2020. Now the question is, what happens to the chair next to Jason Ross in Afternoon Drive? What do the Kings do in terms of finding their next analyst on TV? It'll all be interesting to watch unfold. LZ Granderson is a little bit more surprising to me. Now, he says he knew 3 years ago when he signed his last contract that this was going to be the end of his run at ESPN. Certainly, he is a guy with a lot going on, even within the Walt Disney Company. He is still going to be working with ABC News on his, is it called Life Out Loud, I believe is the name of his LGBTQ podcast. What I find interesting about this is with the rumors out there that we talked about a couple of weeks ago about Good Karma Brands perhaps being in the market to acquire the two remaining ESPN-owned and operated stations out there, does the feeling exist for LZ that maybe if this is not owned and operated by ESPN, there is not the same growth potential? I don't know. It really sort of feels like the way he wrote that farewell post on Instagram, this was always the plan, but I do wonder if these rumors popping up coincide at all with the decision that right now is when he is winding things down with ESPN 710 in Los Angeles. I always appreciate when Ryan Glassbiegel makes time for me, particularly as he is doing right now, as he's trying to keep his baby asleep as he walks the streets of suburban Chicago. Ryan, thanks
not
so much.
Not suburban, not suburban. I pay 11.5% sales tax. I'm not having anybody say I live in the suburbs.
All right, let's talk about your new piece. Would you put this out there? And this is interesting. I'm going to give a little bit of insight to our text here. Back and forth as you were putting the column together. This is something, the idea that someday a sports book is going to lure one of these big time insider type reporters, be it Woj or Shams from the NBA, be it Schefter, Rappaport from the NFL, whoever. This is something that you told me seems like in the industry a foregone conclusion at this point, that it's going to happen. It's just a matter of who pulls the trigger when.
Yeah, because they're, you've seen the sports books go after personalities, whether that's in partnerships, like as with Simmons and The Ringer or Colin Cowherd's Volume Sports Network. Both of those are partnered with FanDuel. Dan Le Batard and John Skipper famously signed a $50 million licensing deal with DraftKings. The next frontier from the like kind of radio, TV, podcast personalities is these insiders who have enormous social clout. It's an arms race between all the books to sign people up for their apps, get their credit card in the system. They're throwing a ton of money, not just at partnerships, but at sign-up bonuses, which I write about at another job. And the insiders have enormous social clout. Go look at Schefter or Woj or Shams or whatever, any of their timelines. look how many likes and retweets they get. People are looking at everything they say, and they would be enormously valuable just for that purpose for a sports book.
So obviously the social clout makes the information even more valuable because of the distribution. But I wonder, are there any sort of legal hoops that these sports books would have to jump through, or does presenting the information that they will have when they set these lines make it even more transparent than they already are?
Well, I think one of the reasons that it hasn't happened yet is that we're still in the frontier where states are legalizing one by one, and then their books are all trying to get licenses. So like, for example, BetMGM or The Score or Unibet or Twin Spires or Wynn, who aren't in Illinois, they don't want to have to sit in front of a regulation board and answer questions about how they're using like Adam Schefter as a way to get an advantage on the public through insider trading. Think about how valuable it would be when to have him right before the Aaron Rodgers news dropped. Right. And that was how I started my piece, was that right before he decided to come back, there was a story reported by Darren Revelle that Superbook, which is like known as kind of the godfather of the sports books in the sense that they open the lines in Las Vegas and then everybody kind of follows them. They, according to Revelle, took the Packers over under total down because they got a tip that Rodgers might retire. That report says they were utilizing inside information not to profit off the public, but to limit their liability in the event that news came out, and then in the, I don't know, 20 or 30 seconds before their traders can pull it down. After, it was Ian Rappaport who broke the story that he was leaning towards coming back. But once that happens, the floodgates are open and people start pounding the Packers. If you can use these insiders, kind of their savvy of knowing when major news is about to drop, to take the line down and limit liability, I don't see that as like insider trading where you're taking advantage of a public that knows less than what you do.
I want to talk about that idea, and I'll let you go on this. I want to talk about that idea that the social reach is so valuable that all of these guys provide. Could you foresee a scenario where as soon as one sports book gets their insider and others start to follow, could that be the end of content creators being able to make these $50 million deals with these sports books? I mean, once they get the social clout of a Shams or of a Woj, do they have everything that they have been looking for from, be it a Dan Le Batard deal or a deal with The Ringer or something like that?
Well, it's definitely going to dry up. There's another frontier, and that's the people, especially in conservative talk radio. Like, you know, you look at the type of ads that are on Fox News Channel, and it was, you know, MyPillow is the one that jumps out. Like, the conservative ad market is, it costs a lot less to advertise per viewer on Fox News than it does on CNN and MSNBC. Tucker Carlson crushes Chris Cuomo or Rachel Maddow in the ratings. You watch Cuomo and Maddow, and they've got blue chip brands, and there aren't nearly as many of those on Fox. And so there's definitely a market opportunity for books to like go after like Hannity or Dan Bongino or Tucker Carlson or on and on and on. That so I don't think that these deals are totally done yet, but they might be exhausted in sports media after the insiders are the last ones who capitalize.
We've got a newbie to the podcast, Michael Quirk, making his debut here on Media Noise. Michael, you have been doing, you've been covering like every aspect of the sports media lately, and Barstool's deal with the Arizona Bowl is no different. It feels like we've had three or four different writers writing about this in some form or fashion this week. But you wrote an interesting story where this is not unforeseen, right? The Arizona Bowl, the University of Arizona, getting some blowback for the association with Barstool. And the answer from the executive director, Kim Adair, seems to be, look, man, we got to do something to stand out in this space.
Yeah, I actually liked what she said. Barstool drums up such strong emotions from folks on both sides of the coin. Barstool can essentially hold a puppy drive where they're saving every puppy in America, and you'll have people saying, oh, of course they're not saving cats. but then you'll have other people where Barstool could do something nefarious and they would say, well, you're actually blowing this out of proportion.
A puppy shooting drive. Yeah,
exactly.
So the interesting thing to me about the Arizona Bowl and this deal, you and I are both big college football fans. This is going to be so Barstooled up. I mean, for people that have not heard, the Barstool Arizona Bowl will be available exclusively through barstool.com. Dave Portnoy says he and Big Cat are going to be the color commentators. You know, I think a bowl game that matches up teams from the MAC and the Mountain West needs something like this, but I'm also curious what those conferences' reactions to this is going to be the first time they see it in practice.
You know, you have a guy like Dave Portnoy, who's a genius marketer, always has been. That's how he's been able to grow it. And so if you have an athletic director who really wants to be opportunistic, mm-hmm. you've got to be excited about this, because there are so many antiseptic bowls of, hey, let's just throw one. And I'm sorry, Idaho, but let's throw one in Idaho. We'll talk about potatoes. It'll be great. That'll be our niche. Hey, let's throw one in the Bahamas. Popeyes, I guess. And for this one to be so different and have such a large base behind it, I'm guessing that there's going to be a lot of folks in the stands, a lot of folks tuned into it. And I think it's a great idea. And it's a great opportunity for smaller schools like that to make it something interesting, to really get interested in some smaller conference football. You really either need a niche or you need some betting involved.
Yeah. I want to make this clear. Like, I'm not saying that I am rooting against Barstool, that I don't think they should be on the Arizona Bowl. I think you look across the landscape of college bowl games, and again, Michael and I are both huge college football fans. As much as I like bowls, there are too many bowls. It is undeniable that there are too many bowls. Granted, I will watch every single one of them, but there are too many for them all to stand out. And I think you look at any of them not owned and operated by ESPN, they are watching the Arizona Bowl with a keen eye to see what Barstool can do to bring in even hardcore fans that just don't care about smaller schools.
Yeah, and I'm in the same wavelength as you in that I agree that there's so many bowls to the point
where one in Montgomery, Alabama, for Christ's sake.
Hey, congratulations on the great year. You're going to Shreveport.
Hey, at least Shreveport's got a casino.
That's true. And it's sort of like the old Bill Burr joke where he talks about the NFL draft. He goes, there's guys who watch every pick for 4 hours when they put a list out the next day. And I'm like, yeah, that is dumb. But also, I'm going to watch the entire NFL draft. And that's the way I am with bowl games. I'm like, really? They have two in Detroit? Yeah, I'll watch both of them. And you're exactly right. With ESPN seeing how this does and getting away from, okay, let's just have so-and-so who went to the Northwestern School of Journalism and has paid their dues for 20 years. Let's have them call four of these. Same exact person. Let's have them call four of these. About trying to find different ways to broadcast these, to make these more interesting. Because right now, what they're doing is just, hey, you really want to watch Troy take on UNLV? I mean, UNLV's got this great running back. You can't sell that to me. That's a parent trying to say, oh, you want to try this broccoli? It tastes just like chocolate. I know it doesn't taste like chocolate. I'm not going to eat it. Okay. And so if you can do something that makes it interesting and kind of, you know, kitschy, then you have a better chance of folks who aren't, you know, lunatics like the two of us tuning into all these games.
Thanks to Ryan and Michael for joining me this week. Look, there is always plenty to keep our eyes on as we look ahead to what we're paying attention to next week in the world of sports media. But I feel like the Penn National deal to acquire The Score is just miles above everything else in terms of what the implications are going to be. The Score is a massively popular, not just sports betting app, it is the third most popular sports app, period, in North America. To have that and Barstool essentially under the same corporate umbrella, I think The Score is about to get this big influx of younger users that will go out and proselytize the brand, which is something every brand, regardless of industry, wants, right? So we will keep an eye on that. I'm so interested to see if The Score continues to be the name, or if suddenly Barstool and what we have assumed is coming, a Barstool Bets app, or I guess what is out there now, a Barstool Bets app, I wonder if it suddenly gets a shot in the arm and the Score and Barstool Bets are merged by the folks at Penn National Gaming. I'm certainly keeping my eye on that. I'll talk to you next week.
This concludes our broadcast day.
Thanks for listening to the Media Noise Podcast with Dimitri Ravanos. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and leave a review. And check back soon for new episodes. To stay up to date on the latest sports media happenings, visit BarrettSportsMedia.com.